From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we launch our 21st year here. So thanks much for all your support over that time. We are joined by phone by Joe Diaz, and he's going to tell us all about the Father-Son program for 2019-2020 coming up. Joe, good day to you.
Yeah, good day to you, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you with us. Tell us, first off, just a little bit about the Father-Son program, the goals, and et cetera.
The goal is to really have the father and son communicate and help the fathers help their boys transition into manhood. So the programs we're going to be talking about human sexuality, how that impacts one relationship, how to respect one as a male, and respect the female gender as well.
And, of course, we have mother-daughter programs as well, which are sort of companion to this.
That's correct.
Is there a model for this? Is this a sort of a national program, or is it more localized?
It's been more localized to address the needs of our community and our parish, if you will. We at St. Clair have really looking at it closely and trying to really modify it a little bit to meet the needs of our people who attend the program.
Very good. And the upcoming one will be Saturday, October 26th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Clair Parish in both English and Spanish.
That is correct, yes.
And St. Clair, of course, is at 1950 Junction Boulevard in Roseville. If you want more information, you can contact Anna at 916-850-5840. Joe, you're going to be the MC?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm fortunate to have done it for the last couple of years.
And what does that involve?
It's basically introducing the program and the speakers who are going to be addressing the participants.
Mm-hmm.
And then I give a final analysis at the end of the program, what we feel, where they go from there. One of the main things that we really want the parents to really discuss the events of the day with their sons, particularly in the human sexuality area, and looking at, you know, we're going to talk about dopamine and mm-hmm. how that pleasure hits the students, our boys, and basically to have the father understand, have the children understand the changes in the body, puberty and whatnot, mm-hmm. and how they respond to their sexuality in addressing their biological needs, so to speak.
Is there a Q&A portion of this as well?
Yes, there is. We're asking the participants to write questions down at the end of each speech, and then we will address those questions at the end of the program.
That's better than making them raise their hand and with this subject, huh?
That is correct. They pose some interesting questions.
Yeah, if you had to raise your hand, you might be a little timid to do it. And this way, if you have them written, they can be anonymous and they get their question answered.
Yeah, this year we're going to do a little bit things different, if you will, Bob. We're going to talk about the consequences of sexuality, what happens when a girl gets pregnant, the behavior of the male, what their responsibilities are, to be more consciously aware and understanding their physiology when it comes to sexuality.
Very
good. You know, and discuss the consequences and the responsibilities that we as males have in addressing not only our biological needs, but also in respecting our body and respecting the body of the women as well.
And this is for boys 12 to 15?
It's 10 to 16, I believe.
Okay.
And we're expanding it a little bit.
And if they don't happen to have a dad, which unfortunately a number of kids don't, you can bring someone else.
We're hoping someone that the mom has confidence in, be mm-hmm. it a good friend, a cousin, an older adult, an uncle.
Right.
That thing would also suffice.
Very good, very good. And how often do you offer this?
Once a year, every October.
Okay, and
yeah, one interesting thing, though, we're the only ones at this point in the diocese who's offering the program at this point. That has been scheduled, let's say that.
Are there materials? Is there a manual or anything for this?
Not really. There is a manual for the speakers and what they're supposed to be covering, but we will have handouts with regards to the program that we're having today.
And it's designed not to be lighthearted, but at least to not make it heavy-hearted.
It's lighthearted. We're going to make it easy and simple, not really graphic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole message is to encourage the dad to have communications with their sons regarding the issue of sexuality, and basically encouraging them into adulthood. Most men really don't have a father figure in their lives, if you will. If you look at research, what we're trying to do, we want to fill in the gap to really encourage kids what their responsibilities are as males in our society.
Very good. And if it's $20 per family, includes snacks. Register, go to scd.org/father-son. That's just one word, father-son. Or you can contact Janice at 916-733-0177. Anything I didn't ask you, Joe, that you'd like to add?
That's about it. We encourage those listeners, if you have the time, to please join us. I think they're going to have a great time and great opportunity to learn a little bit more about what we want to say, men who are transitioning into adulthood.
Very good. Joe, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for all you do. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, God bless.
God bless.
Yeah,
you
God
right.
bless you too, Joe. Thanks so much. That's Joe Diaz, who will be the MC. Again, scd.org/father-son, 916-733-0177. It will be at St. Clair Parish, 1950 Junction Boulevard in Roseville. You can also contact Anna at 916-850-5840, Saturday, October 26, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., sessions in both Spanish and English. The 11th Annual Confirmation Conference will be held on Sunday, November 17th, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is for the North State at the Red Bluff State Theater, which is becoming a regular venue up there. Historic theater right there on Oak Street, 333 Oak Street in Red Bluff. Again, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday, November 17th, featuring Jackie Francois Angel, Joe Melendrez, Mike Patton, and Nick Pierce, the Fired Up 11th Annual Confirmation Conference. Gabe?
I was just going to remind everybody, it's been a while since I've been on to talk about it, but we've been tracking the fact that we have new followers for our podcast, and the fact that we have, I know a lot of people listening online. We had Jim McCormick in here last week talking about, the upcoming stuff for Sac Choral Society.
Stained Glass Conference coming up this Saturday.
And he was saying how he still gets people walking up to him saying they heard us, they heard him on Catholic radio and on our podcast and things like that, which is great. You know, I'm very excited that people are catching on to the podcast and to listening to us on our website. But I just, you know, wanted to remind people who are listening here at night on Relevant Radio that you can also catch us other places, other times of the day that will be maybe more to your leisure. Or leisure. I never know which way you're supposed to say that. It's like data and data. But you can catch us, you know, on our website, which is scd.org. You scroll down the website a bit past the events, and there's little, like, they look like little coasters for drinks. And there's, like, I believe, like, different departments have their own different sort of sub-websites underneath our website and underneath the SCD website. And one of them is ours for the Bishop's Hour. You can catch, I think it's about a week or so in backlog of shows. And then if you go to iTunes or Google Play, depending on what kind of phone you have, it was a phone platform. If you have a Google-based phone, which is like Android and all those ones kind of things, an Android device, you can get Google Play. if you have an iPhone, you have the iTunes store for podcasts, which comes preloaded on your phone already. Those apps that already come up on your phone, and you just type in Sacramento Bishop's Hour, and it comes up, and you hit the subscribe button. And what that button does is it just lets you know when there's new episodes come up. It doesn't text you or email you or anything annoying like that. It doesn't give you an indicator on your phone. What it will do is it'll just, when you go open that app again, it'll tell you have, this many episodes to listen to of the Bishop's Hour, and it doesn't, and you can set it to automatically not download, so it doesn't take up data or any of your space on your phone. I mean, it's very simple. It's very non-intrusive. It's very, very easy to do. So I just want to remind everybody to do that, because it helps us spread the show.
Yeah, it's great. It's a brave new world out there, a whole new world.
It is. It's amazing the things that pop up, because I'll listen to podcasts and they'll say, we're on this platform and this platform and this platform and this platform. And after a while, it's kind of like, I feel like you're investing in pet.com at some point. You're like, yeah. Okay, it's a little too many.
Well, somebody, if people say, the guy's speaking Greek, they can contact you.
Yeah, call me and I'll speak Greek to you over the phone. 916-733-0107 is the inside line here. Don't tell anybody. It's the inside line.
Yeah.
And that's the line that'll get you to my office. Or you can email me at radio@scd.org, and I can answer any questions for you. We've been talking about putting a BJ Visitation, our communications director, and I have been talking about putting up a tutorial on the website for a while now. We just haven't gotten around to doing it yet. But
well, and you have to figure out, you have to also put up a tutorial on how to access the tutorial.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny, is one of the first roadblocks we thought of was like, okay, I'll do this on my phone, and we'll videotape me on my phone doing this. And it's like, well, wait, whose phone are we going to use to videotape it? So now we have to, watch both of our phones now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's easy to do. It sounds like it's not easy, but it is very easy. Much like most technology, it seems like it's hard in the beginning, but once you get the hang of it, it makes your life much easier and quicker. So, it's an easy way to access the Bishop's Hour.
Yes, that's what you said to Henry Ford.
Look at us now. Driving Teslas.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Gabe.
Yeah, of course.
And don't hesitate, call him, 916-733-0107.
Yes, and I was going to mention the father-son program. That sounds very good. There's also, I think, the mother-daughter one coming up as well.
Yes,
so
there
I
is.
Want to make sure I make sure I put that on there. I think that we're going to get that up here again soon. And also tomorrow, you can go to our website, like I told you earlier, to listen to this interview if you did miss it. But tomorrow we are going to replay Bishop Wiegand's interview Bob had with him last week about the 20 years here on the Bishop's Hour.
And Bishop Wiegand, of course, was the one who founded it. It was his idea.
Yeah, it was. It was his idea. And what's funny is I've been here, 12, 13 years now. I don't think this room has changed much. Well, has it changed before I got here?
Is this room?
Yeah, your room here?
No.
No?
So, there's three chairs and a round table.
Yeah, yeah.
And no windows.
No. Well, there's a window behind you, but it looks into another room. The one in front of you, which looks into my room. So, but yeah, nothing. No outside.
No outside.
No outside.
You don't know if the wind's blowing. It's raining. You have no idea. And you come in, and you know what the weather was.
Right.
And sometimes you walk out, you go, "Whoa, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened while I was in this?" Cell.
What's funny is
I like this room.
I like it too.
It's a very, the nice thing about it, and most radio studios are like this. It's about 8x8 or 9x9, something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like a kid's bedroom in a house.
Right.
Like,
Yeah, yeah.
And about the size of the bedroom I shared with my brother for 18 years. and it's conducive to conversation. Because you're
very much,
there's no distractions. Nobody's looking out. Oh, look, there's a tornado coming. There's there's no distractions, and it's intimate. You're sitting at a table, and it's comfortable intimate. It's not.
Right.
I used to work at I had a talk show with KFBK at night, and it had this door that was like to the studio where the actual microphones were. There was a newsroom where people were doing their work and stuff, but the actual microphones in the studio, this door was like a vault to a bank.
They usually are, yeah.
Yeah, it was like 14 feet thick. And, and it's where you went to hide out in like a bomb shelter, you know, but soundproof. I mean, really soundproof. And when you closed that door, it's kind of like all the oxygen went out of the room. It didn't have, even though you got used to it and you got very comfortable, this room's very comfortable. It feels like you're just having a conversation. You know, we don't have couches in here or anything.
Right.
But you're just having a chat.
And those of you who listen to our show on headphones know this room is not soundproof. Every so often you hear the conversation coming from the Catholic Herald across the way, or people walking
it's
down the hallway.
A good conversation. Yeah, usually,
yeah.
On.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, for sure. If you can isolate that, you might hear what's coming up in the next Herald.
Yeah.
One of my old jobs many years ago, was working at the comedy club downtown, and I would take comics who were in town to do press to radio stations. And I did notice that a lot of the radio stations had these big, gigantic buildings that were like in these big media buildings, and they would have, there's one actually downtown right off of Enterprise, or whatever it's called, the Expo Boulevard. And it's a beautiful building, really beautiful studios, and they have windows. And in the morning, when I would take the comics, a lot of times it was sun up was coming up, or it was just, you know, it was really pretty sunrise. People were going to work, and it was distracting from time to time. People would look out the window and go, "Oh wow, hey, look outside! It's not," or like, you know, I remember one time having a conversation on the air about a bird that had been flying around, and it was just like this weird thing where it was like this wouldn't happen naturally. This is just this unnatural sort of spot. And a lot of the radio stations over the years of going there would actually start to black out their windows, where they put like paper up or what have you. And they, you know, they would say, a lot of them would say it was because people would walk by. But at the same time, that's the distraction you have, people walking by, doing stuff like that. So yeah, this room is it's funny. It's like you hear, remember in the 50s and 60s, they used to joke about, you know, broadcasting from the, you know, the bomb shelter or whatever, you know, this whole like sort of, you know, setting the stage for you being this lone voice in the night from this, you know, thing. We kind of are, though.
Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, that's right. Wolfman Jack used to. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, you get like George Norrie in the middle of the desert somewhere. It's like that whole thing. And we kind of are in this little area. But it's served us so well for all these years.
Well, as you know, I've done considerable amount of work for the Catholic Channel
on
Sirius Satellite Radio, and so to a national audience, and their headquarters, the times I would get called back to New York, like when Pope Benedict was there or Pope Francis was there, is on the 37th floor in Manhattan.
Right.
And you're walking down the hallway to the studio, and the hallway is right next to all these windows, and you're hoping those windows are secure. You know, somebody bumps.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
But you're looking down 37 stories, and I'm going, how can I do a radio show up here? How can I even guest on a radio show up here with this view? You know, it's
right.
And it's mind-numbing. But then you go in the studio, and they close the door, and it's windowless. They don't want you looking out the 37th story, even though one step out the door, you're looking straight down.
I wonder if you ever get used to that living in Manhattan. You know, you get these people who have these they have these like penthouses, and even the ones that just have the regular, you know, quote unquote regular apartments on like the 50th floor or what have you. These buildings, I don't know how you even if your view is looking across at another building, the fact is you can look down and you know where you are.
I can't imagine. I don't think I could sleep at night.
Didn't you say when you went to that Catholic Channel thing that there was like all these celebrities and just all the, it was like the Catholic Channel was one thing amongst all these like Martha Stewart's living and all these other things?
Virtually every channel they had was up there, and sometimes there'd be shared studios, but most of them had their own studio. And they're all quite small. Most of them weren't much bigger than this one because they're renting space or they're renting space in Manhattan. And so they're putting as many different shows. Of course, the series has like 200 channels.
Right.
Now.
So
there were all sorts of people you'd run into in the elevator. One day, and you have it's the building right near Rockefeller Center. And I don't know New York very well, but
I know 30 Rock is the TV show, it's, yeah, and SNL. Exactly. That's pretty much all I know. You know, the big tree,
right?
Yeah.
So there's 8 elevators downstairs, and you have to go through security. And if you're like a foreigner like me coming there just on occasion,
yeah,
you have to have had somebody upstairs phone down and say there's going to be this guy from California there, and you show your ID and stuff.
And you were post 9/11 too, so security was real ramped up.
Real ramped up. Yeah, yeah. And the last time I was there was when Pope Francis visited, and
right?
Both in New York and Philadelphia, and he, so there's 8 elevators, and they all go to different floors. It's not like there's 8 elevators and they all go to whatever floor you push the button for.
Right.
They all go to, and the guy hands me my pass, and he says you'll be in elevator 8. And so I look over to elevator 8 and go to stand there, and there's one other person waiting for elevator 8, which means it's going up to Sirius.
Okay.
That's the Sirius elevator.
Right, right.
Or at least that day it was.
Right.
And I'm going, I know this person. I know this person. He was about 90 feet tall. I kept looking at him, and I kept looking at him. I mean, carefully, you know, I didn't
right.
stare.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, impolite. And I'm going, I know this guy. How do I know him? It's from my past somewhere. And the elevator doors open. He ducks and gets in. I get in. It's just the two of us. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. When I was growing up, it was Lou Alcindor.
Right, yeah, but still, I mean,
played
yeah.
for UCLA. We yeah. knew about him when he was in high school.
Right. He was like LeBron James before LeBron exactly. James was ever even exactly. thought of. Yeah,
he
yeah.
was the most famous basketball player ever at that time.
Right.
Ever in the history
I mean,
basketball.
Arguably still.
Still.
Yeah, I mean, he went to do movies and activism. I mean,
well,
he's still very
he
famous.
The top 5 NBA players of all time, which right. is almost impossible. He's always going to be one of them.
Yeah, and college players, too.
And college
yeah,
players,
yeah.
yeah.
He was the man. Yeah,
I
yeah.
remember he came out of Power Memorial Academy in New York, and everybody went to UCLA as a freshman, and everybody already knew about him, and
right.
they were going to win national champ. And I'm going, don't say anything. Smile. Say hi. Don't say, I know who you are, as I had just discovered who you are, you know,
right.
because he probably already knows who he is.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I'm going to tell you who you are.
Right, yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And we just kind of smiled at each other. He was very pleasant. And I said to him, I said, I remember listening to the radio to your first game at UCLA.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he say to that?
Because I did. I made a special point of finding the UCLA broadcast and
yeah.
listening to it. And he kind of smiled and he said, that was a long time ago. You know?
Yeah.
And he and I think, are almost exactly the same age.
Oh, okay.
And so we're both in our 40s.
Same height, too.
Yeah, same height.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much the same height.
Yeah, same hook shot, everything.
Some people lose height over time. He did not appear to have lost any height. I guess
well, you think about it, you're the same age. You guys have shortened at the
well,
same time.
True.
So he's probably just
time.
As tall. Yeah, yeah.
Gravity did
to
not
you.
Appear to have affected him. And I thought, do I do the selfie thing? You know, it's like, nobody will believe me. I didn't.
No, it's believable because of where you were.
Yeah.
I mean, people can look back at the records, and you were on the radio at that time
yeah,
at 30 Rock. So
they also have a little, like a performance area at Sirius.
Oh yeah, because they have bands and stuff. Will play there.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
And it's out kind of in the. There's not a public section, but it's open to anybody who's. Up there who got past security.
Gotcha.
Different radio hosts or producers or maybe somebody's in the technical side of Sirius or something, and they'll have somebody who's maybe guesting on some music channel will be in there, and they're
right
singing or they're doing something, and it's soundproof. You have to go in there, but somebody left the door open, and it was just after I had finished the gig. Somebody I walk out in the hallway, and I hear this beautiful violin or whatever it was. I'm not very musical, and it was absolutely beautiful. And there's about 20 people sitting in this little
yeah.
studio listening to this guy, and he's up there on a violin or cello or whatever
right.
it is. And I had no idea who it was, but it was beautiful music.
Wasn't Charlie Daniels?
No.
No, okay.
And I said to somebody out in the hallway, I said, who is that? And they said, that's Yo-Yo Ma. And I went, oh, okay. I know that name, but I wouldn't have known Yo-Yo Ma from my ma.
Right. You know?
But, I mean.
He is the Lou Alcindor of cello.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he is the cream of the bar of cello.
After 10 or 15 minutes, he comes out, and I was able to say hi and say, you know, I don't know much about music, but that's really beautiful stuff. And nicest guy in the world.
Really?
And I've heard that since. Just the nicest, most humble. If he was walking down the street, you would have no idea he was the man.
I saw a documentary with him and his son is really good, too, and is an interesting guy. He seemed like a very interesting guy.
Talent coming out his ears, but not an ounce of ego.
You know? Right, right. Just, I love the idea that you could be on an elevator with, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, Howard Stern, Yo-Yo Ma, Taylor Swift, and Cardinal Dolan could all be on the same elevator together. Elevator. Yeah. I love that idea.
The same elevator.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Wow. I wish that they would expand their programming again, and then we could go out there, and I could go to that place too. I like to check that kind of stuff out.
It'll happen.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Yeah, always does. Fun things always happen.
Yeah. So it's you never know what the good Lord has around the corner for you. But I can tell you that the two times I've been there recently for Pope Benedict at Ground Zero, and then Pope Francis when he said Holy Mass outdoors on the Ben Franklin Parkway in Philadelphia, were truly, truly very emotional and magical moments in my life of being that close to our Holy Fathers. So we'll take a quick break. Back with more right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff. Thanks for all you do and have done throughout our area. Much appreciated. Music for the Soul, a benefit concert for Joshua's House Hospice, an evening of music, art, and community. When God put music in the human heart, God put prayer there. That's from Joan Chichester. Joshua's House Hospice. This will all take place Friday, October 18, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacraments. Solo performances. You're in for a treat. Father Michael O'Reilly, pianist and flutist. Rex Valanca, organist, who's the music director at the Cathedral. Rachel Songer, soprano, and just the voice of an angel. She's just tremendous. And Robert Camillo, a classical guitarist, again, at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. It is a fundraiser for Joshua's House Hospice. Tickets are $25 in advance, $35 at the door. Available online at Joshua's House, that's J-O-S-H-U-A-S, househospice.org. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Gail Davenport, who will be one of the featured speakers at the Divine Mercy Conference. It was one of the featured speakers, and will tell us her story about Divine Mercy. Gail, good day.
Good day. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing very good. You have a very interesting Divine Mercy story.
Well, I have so many of them. I had to pick in order to stay within the time limit. So I kind of stuck with three basic ones that were like the beginning of my journey with Divine Mercy, including my own reconversion to the church, which came about from my aunt praying it for me, who was my godmother.
Those darn aunts praying for people.
Yes.
My Aunt Flo is the one that prayed for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is my Aunt Agatha, and she lived in upstate New York. And my husband and I, I'd been away from the church for over 20 years, and my husband and I went to on a business trip to Boston.
Oh.
And on the way back, we were gonna take a little road trip down through upstate New York, and I was gonna show him where I lived on Long Island, where I grew up. And so coming down the Hudson, I had called my aunt to see if I could stop by and say hi, and she didn't want to go out at night because she was older and she mm-hmm. had made that decision sometime earlier. So we had a little snack at her house. And about the first thing she did was hit me with, do you still go to church? And I had to admit that occasionally on Easter I might, but for the most part I didn't. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I'm going to be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet for you then, she said, because, and she didn't live very far from Stockbridge, Massachusetts, probably a couple hours distance.
Which is kind of the world headquarters of
Divine Mercy.
Yeah,
they later found out, right, exactly. Yeah. So she told me that she likes it because you pray it on rosary beads and it's very quick and it doesn't take any time at all and it's very, very powerful. And I just didn't think much of it, you know. Well, within a year...
Had you heard of it at that point?
No, I never had heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even register the name of it at the time that she told it to me, except for, later I remembered it. But about a year later, my little grandson, who was about four at the time, kept telling me he wanted to go to church. He must have learned about it in preschool. And he was baptized Catholic. My daughter and his father baptized him. And but they neither of them practiced, so I don't know why they did. And at the time, I was so removed from the church, I didn't even go.
You know, it's not that unusual for the mom and dad, neither of them going to church, but have a Catholic background, if you will,
right,
to want their baby to be baptized.
Right, exactly, and they did. And he saw angels from the time he was little,
mm-hmm.
and he would describe them to me and everything.
Wow.
So when he said he wanted to go, I thought, well, you know, she worked on the weekends. She was a paramedic, and so she wasn't really available to take him. So I thought, well, it's going to be up to me. So my intention was really just to take him so he would find out about it so that when he got older he would know about it and he mm-hmm. could go to church if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know the effect it was going to have on me. So I that's part of my story, though, and how I happened to come back and then went from there. After I'd been back to the church several years, probably 3 or 4 years, I found a Divine Mercy booklet and I sat on it in the pew.
Oh,
at
wow.
church. And it was old and tattered. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is the one my aunt was telling me about. I think this must be for me.
Was it just instruction on how to pray, or was it? Did it actually have some of St. Faustina's messages?
It was a booklet that had it's pretty scaled down. It's not mm-hmm. like it's her diary,
right.
but it has a lot of the messages. And
oh, wow.
They really struck me. And I never thought to pray it. I just knew about it, and I kept it with me, and I ended up using it many times on people's deathbeds. What I was seeing was the graces that were coming upon them from the time that I said the Divine Mercy until the time that they passed.
Mm-hmm.
The three people that I'm going to be talking about, they all had just beautiful deaths. And one in particular was somebody who would never have gone to heaven, in my estimation. but who knows what I know?
That person is probably glad you don't have the decision.
he's glad that I was there, believe me. That's part of the story, though. But the last time I was to the Divine Mercy Conference was about 2 years ago, and I remember after hearing people's stories, I thought, well, I've got stories too, you know. And so then I put the word out to John Deering that if he ever needs anybody, you know, for like the short storyteller, I would be more than happy to do it. And so he called me this year, sometime around March. And I got a little side story about Divine Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about, but it just shows you the power of it. I had to have a hip replacement surgery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently had it. So I was trying to take a nap, and I just that day made my appointment with the orthopedic surgeon. And I couldn't sleep. So it was about 2:05, and it was too late for me to go to my church, St. Joseph's, to do the Divine Mercy at 3:00. But the radio station, Relevant Radio, is about 2 miles from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And they have adoration from 2:00 to 5:00 every day. So I've gone many times there just because it's so close.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got in the car and I went over there and got there about 2:45. And there was a man there that I had never seen before, and he was lighting candles. And he asked me what was going on with me because I'm on a cane and everything. And so I explained that I had to have a hip replacement. And he said, well, I'm having one too.
Wow.
And I said, oh. He said, yes. And he said, I've got the most wonderful Catholic doctor. And he named him.
Uh-huh.
And I said, that's the doctor that I just made the appointment with today.
Wow.
And I just knew that I looked up at the crucifix in the chapel there, and I just knew Jesus was smiling down and telling me, I've got this.
That's great.
But if I hadn't gone there to pray the Divine Mercy that day, I never would have
seen
Tom, which is the guy's name, it just was such a confirmation that the Lord was looking after me.
Wow. Well, we're sure the Lord is looking after you. Do you have a favorite passage from her diary?
I think the one that I've relied the most on is the one that talks about when the Divine Mercy is said in the presence of the sick or of a dying person, that person will be greeted by our Lord as the merciful Savior instead of the just judge.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that really struck me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought how wonderful to be able to close your eyes and know that you're dying and know that Jesus is going to be under the side for you as the merciful Savior. And that's the basis of the stories I'm going to be telling is that particular passage, because that's the one that really stuck with me. And
I've told people many times, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling worried or unsure, just grab that diary and just read one passage.
Exactly. Well, I had another wonderful thing happen. I have got twin granddaughters who are now 11, but they were 9 at the time.
Well, that's a wonderful thing all by itself.
It is. And it was my practice to go to the chapel or at St. Joseph's at 3:00.
This is in Lincoln?
Divine Mercy in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday at 3:00. And my daughter had asked me if I would pick them up Tuesdays, which was a switch from the days that I normally did.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, I can. And they live in Rockland, way down Sierra College Boulevard, their school is. It's almost in Granite Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, yeah, but I've got to get to Divine Mercy, so they'll have to hustle. So and I have to take them with me. So I started to take them with me. And within 3 weeks, they're starting to lead decades of it. They're offering prayer petitions for a classmate's mother who was in a car accident, and then for their great-granny who had pneumonia on the other side of the family. And then towards the end of the school year, the great-granny that had pneumonia was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and she didn't have very long. So the first thing those little girls did, and she lived up in Chico, was have their parents take them up there with rosaries pray the Divine Mercy for Granny. And the one little one even had my daughter video her praying it, so that as the time got closer and they couldn't be there, that it could be played for her, and it was. And she watched it just 2 days before she passed.
Oh, how wonderful.
But I knew then why the Lord had me take them with me. I the minute I found out that great-granny was in that place, you know, and that they wanted to go up there and pray it, I thought, this is why he sent them with me this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is how he got the Divine Mercy to be prayed for great-granny.
Boy, it's a great story.
Yeah, and and this last weekend, on Sunday, we prayed the Divine Mercy at 10 o'clock Mass, before 10 o'clock Mass. And this weekend, my little girls came with me to Mass, and they led the parish in the Divine Mercy.
Oh, how wonderful.
Up at the Ambo, yeah. And they were so composed, and so they do the whole thing. They do the beginning prayer, they do the ending prayer, they do everything. So it was really, really, really special.
Well, Gail, that's a very, very inspiring story. I can't. Will you give my name to your to them? Put me on their prayer list.
I will. Well, they pray for me a lot too. So.
Yeah, well, I'll take all the prayers I can get. I'll tell you,
me and both.
Yeah, Gail, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a real inspiration.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to the conference on Saturday. Yeah. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this, so it'll be a new thing for me. So.
Well, thank you so much. God bless.
God bless you.
Yeah, take care. That's Gail Davenport, just with a great Divine Mercy story. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Thanks so much. Be Not Afraid, Living Faith in Challenging Times, an Interfaith 3 conference series on religious freedom. Conference Series 3, and this is all presented by the Catholic Diocese of Sacramento, William Jessup University, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Tuesday, October 29, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the William Jessup University Academic Warehouse, 2121 University Avenue in Rockland. The keynote speaker will be Mary Rice Hassan. Mary Rice is the Kate O'Byrne Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., where she also directs the Catholic Women's Forum, a network of Catholic professional women and scholars seeking to amplify the voice of women in support of Catholic teachings. She's an attorney and policy expert. She speaks at national conferences and universities, advises legislators and faith-based groups on policy matters, and is a frequent media commentator. For the past 3 years, Mary has been a keynote speaker for the Holy See at the United Nations during the annual UN Commission on the Status of Women, speaking on women in work, education, the value of caregiving, and gender ideology. She's the co-author of 2 books on education and the editor of Promise and Challenge, Catholic Women Reflect on Feminism, Complementarity, and the Church. She's a graduate of the University of Notre Dame and the Notre Dame Law School. She and her husband, Kevin Seamus Hassan, have 7 adult children and 1 grandchild. The event is free. If you would like to register, though, you can go to scd.formstack.com/forms/interfaith_3conference. Again, Tuesday, October 29, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at William Jessup University Academic Warehouse, 2121 University Avenue in Rockland. Should be a great, great talk by Mary Rice Hassan. I know a number of you are aware that Cardinal William J. Leveda, former Archbishop of San Francisco and of Portland, Oregon, and the retired prefect for the Vatican Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, he passed away in Rome on September 26th, so just a little over, just about 2 weeks ago. He died at the age of 83, a great man, of course, Cardinal Leveda. So many of us in the Sacramento area knew him as the Archbishop of San Francisco. Funeral services for Cardinal Leveda will be held on October 24 at 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Cathedral. Archbishop Corleone will be the celebrant at Mass, and Archbishop Wester from the Archdiocese of Santa Fe in New Mexico will be the homilist at the Mass. So he will be greatly missed. There will be visitation at the cathedral October 23 from 5 to 7 p.m. This is St. Mary's Cathedral, with a 45-minute vigil at 7. All events are open to the public, but those attending are advised that no parking will be available at the cathedral for the funeral. The services will be live-streamed and may be viewed on the Archdiocese of San Francisco's YouTube channel. The Vatican already held a funeral mass in St. Peter's Basilica the day after Cardinal Leveda's death, with Pope Francis presiding at the committal. The cathedral funeral will fulfill the Cardinal's wishes to hold a funeral mass in the Archdiocese. The Pope joined brother bishops and fellow clergy in remembering Cardinal Leveda for his influence and example. Many highlighted his dedication to church unity, his work ethic, and his pastoral spirit, seasoned in service as Archbishop of Portland and later San Francisco, qualities that recommended him to Pope Benedict XVI for one of the Vatican's most high-profile jobs, prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. That was in 2005, so 14 years ago. Pope Francis sent heartfelt condolences to Archbishop Salvatore Cordeloni and the people of the Archdiocese of San Francisco, and remembered with, quote, immense gratitude the late Cardinal's years of priestly and episcopal ministry among Christ's flock in Los Angeles, Portland, and San Francisco, his singular contributions to catechesis, education, and administration, and his distinguished service to the Apostolic See. Archbishop Cordeloni said he had known the Cardinal ever since he was my seminar moderator in my first year of theology. I always appreciated his guidance and his commitment to the integrity of the Church's faith. Many other people commented as well. Monsignor Harry Schlitt, a longtime San Francisco pastor who served as Vicar General of the Archdiocese and moderator of the Curia under Cardinal Levada, told Catholic San Francisco that the Cardinal's most important contributions to the Church in San Francisco and globally were his, quotes, his spirituality and his ability to take a task and see it through. The Cardinal had a tireless work ethic. After dinner, the two would say evening prayer, and then the Cardinal would return to his desk. Cardinal Levada would, quote, take up tasks no one else wanted to do and complete them. That's why the Holy Father called on him to take up such an important position in Rome, because he knew Cardinal Levada would put his nose to the grindstone and get the job done. Cardinal Levada was also interested in the city and neighborhoods he shepherded. Monsignor Schlitt said the Cardinal would take the bus to neighborhoods he didn't know and walk around for several blocks. This is a quote. He said it was very important for him to get a grasp of the neighborhoods and where people lived and where they came from. He certainly got a good feeling about what a parish was and where they were and how they operated, according to the people who lived in those neighborhoods. Being in San Francisco pastorally was very important to him. Santa Fe Archbishop John Wester, who was ordained as an auxiliary bishop by Cardinal Levada for San Francisco in 1998, said the Cardinal always gave of himself selflessly to the Church that he loved so much, and he used all of his abilities in her service. The gift that always impressed me most was the gift of his heart. He had great compassion for the priests and people of the Church. Cardinal Levada's appointment marked the first time a U.S. prelate had headed the congregation. He served in that position until 2012. The president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Cardinal Daniel DiNardo of the Archdiocese of Houston, said the late Cardinal's ministry was one of expanding service to those around him. Cardinal Levada's intellect and pastoral sense called him from parish priest to archbishop to prefect for the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Before his Vatican appointment, he had served as Archbishop of San Francisco since 1995, so about 10 years, Archbishop of Portland from 1986 to 95, about 10 years, and an auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles from 1983 through 1986. Throughout his episcopal ministry, Cardinal Levada displayed a gift for organizing ministries to strengthen the Church's mission. As an auxiliary bishop in Los Angeles, he oversaw a reorganization plan that divided the archdiocese into five sub-regions. Later in Portland, he streamlined the diocesan branch of Catholic Charities, restructured outreach to Hispanic Catholics, renovated the cathedral, and increased funding for priest retirement and started a new program for priestly vocations. For decades, he was a frequent collaborator with the Vatican and with the future Pope Benedict. He was a doctrinal congregation staff member from 1976 to 1982 and was a bishop member of the congregation beginning in 2000. In the 1980s, he worked with then Cardinal Ratzinger as one of a small group of bishops appointed to write the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It goes really on and on, an awful lot of praise for Cardinal Levada. Cardinal Levada reflected on his service for the congregation in a 2013 interview with Irish Catholic. He says, if you're working for the congregation for the doctrine of the faith, it helps to have a pretty thick skin so that you aren't overly sensitive if you are criticized, he said, adding that the congregation should not be above criticism. Just a wonderful, wonderful man. A lot happening in his life, and everybody will miss him greatly. A great man, Cardinal Levada. Again, the service will be at St. Mary's Cathedral in San Francisco on the 24th of this month, the 24th of October, 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Cathedral. And then the visitation at the cathedral is October 23, 5 to 7 p.m. with a 45-minute vigil at 7. All events are open to the public. Well, we are going to close with the Ave Maria that is from the Stained Glass Concert, which will take place this Saturday. This song is by Daniel Elder.